opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on their 10th anniversary. It's their anniversary. What a wonderful time to be alive. And thank you, producer. What, that's the best. Phil Stubbs. Gotta be the quintessential sound of the Bahamas. And West End Move, gotta be one of the top songs ever. Thank you, producer. The perfect song to bring in the show. Good morning. It is Monday, the 11th of April, 2022, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. Well, on this week's episode of the Bahamas, we are giving away two Pentatonix tickets today. So stay tuned for the trivia question. I think I got it. So, first question, first ticket. What are the official names of the fruit we call hog plum and red plum? That's right. What are the official names of the fruit we call hog plum and red plum? Not to be confused with scarlet plum, hog plum, and red plum. Okay, well, let's say it again. Congratulations to Dwight Strawn, Morning Blend, and the Guardian family on 10 years of expanding conversation, discourse, reasoning, and development in the country. Wow. The answers are coming in quick on that. The answers are coming in quick. Okay, so we're going to give the answer for the first question at approximately 10:25, and then I'll give out the second question. So listen, last week, okay, look here. So I was trying to be fancy. One person gets the two tickets, so it's only one question and that's it. That's it right there. So listen, last week I got a call. I didn't expect to get that call on air. I got a call from one of my colleagues. I guess y'all didn't know that I am an interpreter. I am multilingual. I speak many languages, including raccoon, pidgin English, and a variety of dialects. I speak potcake, curly-tailed lizard. I even speak politician. I still learning. Politician. I was working on this document. You see, I'm not properly qualified in politician yet. I was working on this document. And I see these two sentences. I try and figure out what they mean. First sentence say, Love 97 relocates as U.S. Embassy moves in. And the second sentence say, Wendell Jones appointed Ambassador Extraordinary and Plenipotentiary of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas to the United States of America and non-resident ambassador to Colombia and Malaysia. Now, see, the thing about learning other languages is, like, you could know individual words by themselves. You could figure out what those words mean. But you're not necessarily proficient in a language unless you know what all the words mean together. Like, when you read the words together in a sentence. And I still don't understand exactly what that means. So I'm waking on that. But if you see me in the bush, caw-caw-cawing, don't say nothing. I waking. I busy. I dead busy. And Alpha, we supposed to meet 10 p.m., man. We supposed to meet yesterday at 2 p.m., and you already have the money. Don't make me send my chickchanis after you. A good morning. On some other news in the Bahamas, I told y'all that I wasn't going to call license plate numbers in the road. But I changed my mind on that. I want to say good morning to Pinder's Customs Brokerage. I want to say good morning to the driver of the cab labeled 590. I want to say good morning because I didn't say good morning after you almost ran into us twice, speeding through town, forcing your way into other people's lanes with no turn signal. That's Pinder's Customs and Brokerage, cab number 590. And the reason I'm going to call that number today is because it's like your drivers have a culture of ignoring basic traffic controls and bullying cars on the road. But the second reason why I need to call that number today is because it should be obvious to everyone in the Bahamas by now that the Royal Bahamas Police Force does not have a traffic management plan. They do not have traffic enforcement protocols. They do not have a functional system. In fact, I'm willing to put money on it that 2/3 of the police force don't even know what the traffic controls they're supposed to be enforcing are. There's no way that these good Bahamian Royal Bahamas Police Force officers get up, put on their clothes, go to work, and are instructed that they're supposed to enforce traffic controls, and then they decide not to. At this point, it's become obvious to everyone that there is a policy to not enforce traffic controls. There must be a policy to ignore traffic hotspots and sites where it's certain, not likely, not probable, that traffic infractions are going to occur. That the police refuse to monitor, to interdict, to engage drivers at the Shirley Street and Mackey Street intersection is just madness. Because your tourists, the people who you cater to, who you disadvantage your own citizens to attract and ensure that they have a good time, those people, the vast majority of them, pass right through that intersection at least once during their trip. See, y'all don't think that your lack of action has an impact or that it creates anything, but your lack of enforcement has emboldened Bahamian drivers to engage in the most ultimate foolishness. Like on Saturday afternoon when Montague Ramp was so that traffic on East Bay Street leading onto the Eastern Road and trying to access Shirley Street and Village Road was completely blocked. And while vendors and drivers attempted to clear the intersection, there were those smart-aleck Bahamians that decided to put people's lives at risk to force their way through gaps in the road where people were standing to attempt to clear traffic. And I know what some of y'all are thinking, like the Bobo and Togi them, they don't never rule. These young boy them, they don't never listen. It wasn't the young bad head boys them. It was the rich, fancy people that live on the eastern road and on the eastern side of the island that couldn't figure out why their journey would have to be delayed for some people who want to pile up on the dock. That's just one incident this weekend. Watching countless drivers on the highway, on their cell phones, some making 54 on JFK by the lake, some making 70 miles an hour on their cell phone, drivers turning right on red on multiple intersections, and an escalation in behavior that is so ridiculous. The only thing more ridiculous is that we don't rightly identify this behavior popping up in other sectors of our country. Drivers are now just driving through the red light in the middle of its cycle. They didn't just miss the yellow light. They're not anticipating the green light. They're just going. Because as far as they can tell, the way is clear. I've watched this happen on Shirley Street crossing the Mackey Street intersection. And that's a blind intersection. But what concerns me most is that it seems that the police force is taking on an attitude, well, if the people want to disregard the rules and kill themselves, let them. But two things. It is your job to maintain order on the roads and to protect other drivers from reckless drivers. Right? Secondly, why y'all don't take up this attitude when it comes to cannabis? This if they love it, let them kill them attitude. Because you use that attitude for domestic violence and gender-based violence. Oh, if you don't, if you was tired of the man beating you, you wouldn't go back to him. You'd stop living with him, eh? You know that attitude? Why y'all don't apply that to cannabis? Why you only apply it when people are being killed? When people are being maimed, terrorized, threatened in environments that they cannot control, that they cannot avoid? Is that what you're going to tell the Bahamian people now? Oh, you tired of watching the people run the red light in front of you? You tired of people terrorizing you on the road? Stay home then. You don't have to drive a car. You don't have to leave your house. Is that people? See, this is an important conversation because when you look at today's Guardian, you look at the bottom of the fold, you see a headline that says, "Man who claimed he feared for his life shot dead." See, the man, he claimed that he was in fear for his life following the murder of his brother. The story says alleged brother. He informed the justice that he was concerned that he's going to get killed. He had that bracelet on. He raised the issue. Other people have raised the issue. He did the right thing. He went to the authorities, to the judge. I guess we can say, well, if he wasn't in the life of crime, he wouldn't get killed. But in that moment, he wasn't in the life of crime. He's in the justice system. They put a bracelet on him so they could monitor him. Somebody is monitoring him. May not have anything to do with the bracelet. It looks like we'll never know. These are the things we need to be paying attention to, people. A lot of people are going to say they're criminals. They don't have rights. What are you talking about, Ms. Green? Everybody has rights. Go read the Constitution. The state has an obligation to protect even the criminals. C. same way they have an obligation to protect us on the road. Don't just stop there. I want to say good morning to the driver of AV7374. You passed right through the Charlotte Street pedestrian crossing. You saw those people on the crossing. You saw the cars that were stopped waiting for them to turn. You saw it. You decided to disregard it. It's okay. It is okay. I mean, it's okay that you didn't kill anybody, but still against the law. Also, to the Ministry of Works, what's up with the lights at Market Street and Fredron? Are they malfunctioning? Are they being repaired? What happened to the light that was removed from Frederick Street and Shirley Street? Is that going to be replaced? You're going to bring that back? Please, we need those things up and working. And if you think I'm making light, you know, I'm just running on, I'm ranting. An ambulance was wrecked this morning. We don't know why yet. We don't know why yet. But I could make some assumptions, some assertions. Because we don't respect ambulances. We don't respect emergency vehicles. We don't respect each other on these roads. Producer, before we go to this break, I'm going to read through the text. Play another song for me while we're waiting. All right. Okay, so far, I've not gotten a fully correct answer. I haven't gotten a fully correct answer. Producer, play the song Stop the World and Let Me Off. Okay, so I'm going to give you an opportunity to answer again. You didn't give me the complete answer. I'm going to repeat the question. What are the official names, plural, of the fruit we call hog plum and red plum? Now, somebody here, you got half the answer correct. You got half the answer correct. Texas says, good morning, Aaron. You might as well go work for traffic. You know more than the police them. No, man, it ain't that. It ain't that. It ain't that at all. Everybody is supposed to know all the traffic controls when you get in your car. The onus is on you. You have a responsibility to keep other people safe. The onus is on you. Okay, we've got an answer from the, well, before I go to the text line, let's go to the caller, producer. Good morning. Paula, you're on the clock.
Good morning, Miss Green. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you, Sparky. How you doing?
I know that red plum is what we call prune.
Incorrect.
I'm looking at it in Google. They call it prune.
Yeah, but that's incorrect. It ain't a prune I'd be talking about.
Well, you said red plum.
Yes, but there's a fruit that we is known as red plum, and I got some people in my text line.
Then you got Morgan. It's the hog plum.
What's the proper name?
Spondinus mumen.
There you go. But Sparky, you was in the first person to send that to me, and that's not the complete answer.
But before you go, I wanted to send a condolence out to someone.
Yes, sir.
To the Right Honorable Mr. Boozy Rose.
Yes.
And the passing on his lovely wife and our famous Alba Russell Roll. On the passing of his wife, condolences goes out to the Roll family from Sparky, and I guess all the Bayman people on losing our Alba Roll from ZNS.
Yes.
Saturday morning. Thank you very much.
Absolutely, and thank you very much, Sparky. Thank you very, very much. Okay, I've got a winner. I've got the two names. I'm going to call the last four digits of the texter's number 0738. And the answer is Spondius mumben for yellow, Spanish mumben, a.k.a. hog plum, and red Spanish mumben or purpurea mumben for red Spanish plum. That's 0738. You are the winner of two Pentatonix tickets at Atlantis Paradise Island. Absolutely. Oh, awesome, Texter. Awesome. Enjoy your way. Enjoy your day. Have a safe journey to work. Thank you very, very much. Before we go to the break, let me remind you that the Guardian Radio 10th anniversary celebrations are brought to you by Drifters, Inventive Intellect, Marvelous Marv Cunningham, Wild Seed Designs, Cheesecake Heaven, Comfort Suites Resort, Y Cares Fashion Center, Atlantis Paradise Island, Duncan, Fusion Superplex, and Bristol Cellars. Stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You're on the clock with Erin Green. And when we get back, we have a very important Easter discussion. Where have all the conch, grouper, and lobster gone? Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Today.
Hold on, sweetie. Mommy's sending a text.
But Mommy, my teacher said that you're not supposed to text and drive.
I know what I'm doing.
Oh, look, Mommy, the Smith twins. Mommy, watch out!
In 2017, approximately 54 people died as a result of traffic accidents. A percentage of these fatalities occurred as a result of texting. Just taking your eyes off the road for 5 seconds can increase your chance of crashing. Remember, even the smallest voice counts.
Brought to you by UB Radio and Guardian Radio 96.9.
Like what you're hearing on the show? Want to support the conversation? Sponsor On the Clock today. Call Janet Lees at 302-2304. That's 302-2304. Be the solution. Sponsor On the Clock with Erin Green, where she dissects, we discuss, and you decide.
Happy 10th anniversary to the Guardian Radio family, celebrating 10 years of fresh news, smart talk, public opinion, national discourse. Congratulations.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas. He's legendary. He's born fish for me. Man's old meek and lowly. He's old meek and lowly. Born fish for me. He's the one and only.
Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on the 10th anniversary of the station and of Morning Blend. So, it is Easter week. In fact, this is Holy Week or Passion Week. Yesterday was Palm Sunday. Today is Holy Monday. Tomorrow is Holy Tuesday or Fig Tuesday. Wednesday is Holy Wednesday or Spy Wednesday. Then there's Monday, Thursday, and Friday is Good Friday. The day we eat fried fish and hot cross buns. But look here, one day our descendants, our children, our great-great-grandchildren could look at each other and say, Good Friday, the day we used to eat fried fish with our hot cross buns and conch salad and stew conch and lobster salad. Today, I've invited some environmentalists and conservationists working in the Bahamas to discuss some of the most pressing environmental issues facing the country today. Now, I'm not quite sure who I have in my Zoom room, but I think I've got Dr. Nick Higgs from the Island School. Good morning. Okay. Mr. Eric Carey, BNT?
I'm here, my dear Aaron. How are you?
I am good, good. Good, thank you. And Dr. Krista Sherman from Perry Institute for Marine Science?
Yes, good morning, Aaron. I'm here. Thanks for having us.
Good morning. Let me just do another check for Dr. Higgs. Dr. Higgs, you there?
Hey, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, good, good. Here we go. So, can you introduce yourself briefly? Tell us what you do at the institute you work at, and then let's get right into the conversation. What is the most pressing issue, environmental issue, facing the Bahamas today? Because my belly is telling me it's the possible lack of my favorite sea in the future, but my belly may be wrong, as it is often wrong.
Hey, good morning. I'm Dr. Nick Higgs. I run the research program at the Island School's Cape Eleuthera Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say our most pressing issue right now is we really don't have a good handle on how many fish there are left in the sea.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we're looking at research.
Yeah, so part of our job mm-hmm. really that I see in my job is to help us manage our resources sustainably, including our fisheries.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we all here to do this research to help the government. But right now we haven't been able to do any of that work for over a year now because of some changes to the permitting legislation that's just been holding everything up.
I got you. Okay, I got you. So back to that question, I think that's something Bahamians could like get a, what can you do? What strategies can you create if you don't know what you're working with, what you have left in the ocean? Does Island House provide opportunities for like the average person to come down and get a sense of what ocean conservation looks like and to learn what the sort of process of figuring out how much fish in the sea would look like?
Sure. So the Island School, we used to have twice a year, we have a big symposium, invite people in to show them all the research that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Key stakeholders, Krista and Eric have been here many times, but it's absolutely open to anybody to come along and see the work that we do. And really get a handle on what's happening. And now we're also working pretty hard to make all of that available online too, because, you know, we're in the modern world now, we want to share this as widely as possible.
Absolutely.
But even that kind of thing is not possible because of the strict sharing the information we collect,
mm-hmm.
That was written into some of these policies. So we can't even do that. We can't even have a big open house on this research, but partly also because we can't even supposed to do the research. So we really got our hands tied here.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's get to the other participants,
yeah.
And then we get back to that question of research and access to information. Because I could be honest with you, I worked at the BERC, the Bahamas Environmental Research Center, for a very short stint. It was like an intern position. And really what I did was I drove people around, right? That was my main job. But while I was down there, I learned so much. And one of the things I wanted to do before I left the island was put the whole place on lockdown. And like, if you wanted to come to Andrus, that's like staying at the best penthouse in Atlantis, right? Like, you got to pay proper. There's not no ferry, no mailboat trip. Spend $40, come to the island, pitch up a tent. If you want to come to Andrus to do research, you guys prepared to invest in this country. A treasure trove of things, of organic things, environmental things. It just is amazing. Anyway, so we could definitely gonna get back to the discussion around research and information sharing. Dr. Carey.
Yeah, hey, Aaron.
Now, are you a doctor?
Not the best of my knowledge.
Okay, good. Just checking, because we know you as sort of the leading expert on all things environmental, and we tend to just call you doctor because of that. But introduce yourself to the people and tell us what you do at BNT.
First off, thank you for having us. I see myself really as a compendium, a sponge. I've soaked up a lot from people like Pericles, Malus, and so many others in the past, a lot of scientists who researched and worked in the Bahamas. So I run the Bahamas National Trust. I'm the executive director. And our main mandate, as you know, is managing national parks and protected areas, education, advocacy. Mm-hmm. And we do a lot of this based around science. So the discussion that Dr. Higgs started about scientific research and need to be able to get in the water and bush to understand what's happening is very real and pressing. And so you ask, what is the most pressing environmental issue in the Bahamas? Obviously, it's climate change on a longer cycle, 25, 30-year cycle, some people talk about. And then there's the stony coral tissue loss disease, the punk and what's happening. There's grouper issues. But the point is, you can't get a good handle on exactly what is happening unless you have the ability to do unfettered academic research as per international standards, using Bahamian regulations that make sense. I know our esteemed Attorney General, Mr. Ryan Pinder, when he was talking about this last week, the legislation that we're all trying to get corrected as a poor excuse for governance. And it is about governance because, you talked about, the people you drove around in Andres, and we've had discussions over the years about some of the people that came in, maybe were not properly regulated, but most of them were. But what the legislation was intended to do was to just make it easier for government to understand what was happening, to make permitting more streamlined, automated, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And what we've had is a complete reversal of that. And we're hoping that through some of the advocacy, like in Nick's op-ed piece last week, and also the Attorney General's long article on Friday's Tribune, that we could move towards correcting some of the issues and get people back doing the research we need to understand what's happening with these species so that we could then come up with management prescriptions to do the best we can to ensure that indeed 20, 30 years from now, our children and grandchildren are about Good Friday and what the hell happened to the fish.
Yeah, absolutely. And so let's put the politics and the policy sort of side behind. I think that point that when Bahamians are more confident in their knowledge, right? When they have a sense of why things are changing around them. Like, for instance, when I realize why it is that it's virtually impossible for me to taste a banana, to find a banana in the market that tasted like the bananas that I ate when I was little. I had to go in and figure out what was happening in the banana industry to help Bahamians understand why there are less and less large conchs coming into New Providence. Even though there are more, you could get big, big, massive two-hand conchs still coming out of Crooked Island and Long Key, to understand that, the one-day, two-day fishermen going out and they are basically cleaning everything within their range, right, within their scope of travel. But less fishermen are in Crooked Island. Those conch down there just have more time to grow, more time to hide, more time to move. I think that would make Bahamians better prepared participants in environmental stewardship. But before I run on, Dr. Sherman.
Good morning, Erin. Thanks for having me. Yes, I am Krista Sherman. I'm a senior scientist with the Perry Institute for Marine Science. We are a small nonprofit research organization, and I head up our fisheries research and conservation program. So as Nick was referring to, a lot of the research that I do has a direct applied conservation purpose. So it's designed to help marine resource managers like the BNT wardens and like the Department of Marine Resources to know what's going on with fishery resources. Both traditional species that people are familiar with, like groupers and snappers, but also any emerging species that we're potentially interested in assessing those threats to those species and their ecosystems, and really providing science and recommendations to policymakers so that we could have sustainable resources. And as Eric and Nick referred to, a lot of the issues that we're experiencing right now are related to people's lack of knowledge about the status of those resources and following the regulations so that we have healthy populations, but we also have other threats as well. So I just wanted to highlight some of the other ones that weren't mentioned, and that includes invasive species. So things like lionfish, I don't know if anyone's noticed any green iguanas running around recently. But these are things that come up, as well as pollution and unsustainable development, that can really impact these critical ecosystems. So these are some of the issues that we're working on, would like to continue working on. And obviously governance is a reoccurring theme because it's something that's hindered us from doing that work in the last year.
All right. So, like, guys, your work is impressive. Just a grasp, you know, what I've gotten from you just now, your grasp on the space that you're in is impressive. I have to ask you, I got a text here that says, you can't conserve the ocean while eating sushi. Commercial tuna fishing is disastrous to the environment. So is the cruise ship industry. So here is the question. On the track that we're on with the cruise industry, with tourism, with the culinary options we seek to provide to our millions of guests that are entering the country, can we conserve the ocean and protect the ocean and still carry on with business as usual at the sort of national economic level? Or do we need a plan that also incorporates a shift in how we do tourism?
I could jump in and say, yeah. I think in some ways, yes, you know, it's important not to be all doom and gloom. You know, our lobster fishery, crawfish industry just got certified as a sustainable fishery in 2018.
That's what a lot of my research
is on.
The whole country?
Yeah,
Okay, awesome. That's great.
National industry. That was a major achievement of scientists and policymakers working together. And, you know, your guest mentioned industrial tuna fisheries. Well, we don't really have industrial tuna fisheries. Right now, most of the tuna caught in this country is caught by hand for either sport or subsistence fisheries or artisanal fisheries going to the restaurants. And that's the kind of scale of fishery that I think could support the demand from consumers. But then you have a different story when it comes to things like conch, and as you mentioned, these boats that are having to go further and further and further away, so then they come back loaded down, full to the brim, from areas miles and miles away, and then end up sometimes with these conch that have been traveling for a day or two, and then we see outbreaks of disease, like we did food poisoning, like we did last year. Now I can't, but I don't think that's a coincidence.
Absolutely.
And I'd just like to add, I do think we can have sustainable fisheries. I know some people don't feel that way, but generally speaking, in the Bahamas, as Nick mentioned, we don't have industrial scale fishing. We don't have really destructive fishing practices like what happens in other parts of the world, like trawling and dredging. Long lining was banned in the Bahamas years ago. So those are all really proactive measures that have helped our populations, but there's still room for improvement. One of the things that we want to do in terms of making people aware of what choices are better, at PIMS, we're getting ready to launch a sustainable seafood campaign, and hopefully that'll help people to make more informed choices about the seafood that they're eating, so they know when things are in season, and some healthier, sort of more sustainable options for marine resources that they can be eating.
Now, listen, guys, even advocates can be bigots, right? And I can be honest with you all, I have a bias that I have to work on. Like tilapia and snapper. It's like the tilapia even have a different accent from this. It sound, you know, I'm a multilingual interpreter. It even sound different from the snapper. Tilapia is a freshwater snapper, right?
Yeah, that's a fresh, it's a freshwater fish.
Okay, I might be totally unreasonable when I say, look here, I ain't into no tilapia. I ain't into no freshwater snapper. I live in the ocean. I want salt-raised fish. Or are we really going to have to take investment in tilapia and swai as a group alternative farming seriously as a part of a protocol to or policy to conserve what's in our oceans?
Well, I think it could be there, and I think probably people like you and me have more refined tastes. Some of these people coming in are just interested in a fish burger. You know, they ain't too worried about what kind of fish it is. I could tell you half of the things that I get in a and called crab on a restaurant menu ain't ever come from any crab.
Oh yeah.
So we already there now. In the restaurants, and we all know plenty of this stuff we see on the restaurant menu when it say grouper and snapper. That could be any old fish. So there's plenty of people out there who are less discerning than, you know, if my father goes into a restaurant, he wants to know what kind of fish that is. The man, he was fishing for 50 years. And if you tell him it's one fish and it ain't, he's going to let you know about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, a question for Mr. Carey, Eric. PIMS is working on or has produced a paper that also looks at subsistence fishing practices. Do you, Eric, see a great tension between traditional subsistence style fishing and the growth of more commercial style fishing operations with potential, like when we see a lot of boats with Dominican fishermen on it? They just have a different fishing culture or a different fishing strategy. And I sort of look at it as, I call it a commercial fishing culture, and Bahamians typically have a subsistence fishing culture. Can we balance those, the tensions between cultures, and still implement policies to protect the ocean?
I think Eric may have dropped off, but okay. If you would let him in. But I would just say that commercial fishing, the government has kind of restricted that for Bahamians only. So foreigners are not legally allowed to be engaged in commercial fishing in the Bahamas. So if you have visitors coming in, they're supposed to get recreational fishing permits if they want to do that. And there are limits set on what they can catch. But subsistence fishing, generally, we do have a huge culture of that, and that's what keeps a lot of people going. It's really important for food security. On a publication on that during COVID, and he can talk a little bit more about that. But it's extremely important. It's something that can be sustainable. It's not destructive at all, because in many cases you can target exactly what it is that you want to catch. Eric's, yeah, there he is. He's back on now.
Great stuff.
Yeah, go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, thanks. I was just changing the system. I think our fishing practices have evolved over the years, but not substantially to large-scale commercial fishing. The issues you talked about with respect to perhaps like introduction of new cultures. I mean, obviously we have the issue of the Dominicanos that have come into the fishing sphere. And there are two aspects of it. One is the illegal, poachers that everyone is really concerned about that are really destructive. There is the issue that has been addressed, I think in legislation or attempted to be addressed, where there are Dominicanos who now live here. And the Bahamian fishermen are advocating that that introduction of new cultures are introducing fishing practices that are not sustainable. Mm-hmm. It's just something that the government of the Bahamas, the fisheries sector will have to look at, the government fisheries sector, to see whether indeed there are any new practices that are being introduced, such as breaking out conch on the bottom, which Bahamian fishermen don't like to do, and whether or not those things need to be addressed. But I think generally, because as Krista said, commercial fishing is reserved for Bahamians, I think we have the ability, as we think about whether or not our sector can be sustainable, we have the ability to work to deal with only Bahamians, making it a much easier aspect than if we had opened it up to international interests, which would have then brought law of the sea conventions, and we have the right to that. Well, we did away with that by basically saying, look, we're only going to allow Bahamians to fish commercially in the Bahamas. Now, there is an issue, obviously, that Bahamian fishermen always talk about, is fishermen who are actually coming from the West, from the U.S., mm-hmm. and they're catching more and more and more and more and more on large boats with multiple power reels and large coolers and larger boats. So there are some issues to address there as we think about how we make our industry sustainable. But I believe that if we can manage one or two issues like the one I just referenced, and certainly if we can continue to get poaching under control as the RBDF is doing a better job now, I think we can indeed address the issues facing our industry and indeed have more sustainability in our industry.
Absolutely. Dr. Higgs?
And yeah, I think one of the issues and this came out of this study we did during COVID, where what we saw was when things were shut down on lockdown and you could only really be out to get food and go to the doctor, mm-hmm. what we saw was a lot more people right around here in South Eleuthera turning to the sea for food to go fishing, right? Mm-hmm. And this raises the question of who are these resources for, right? Who should these resources be for? And I think all of us on this call agree that these resources, A, are for Bahamians, as Eric, just not just this generation, but the future generations, okay? So we gotta make sure that, as you mentioned in your introduction, that our children's children still gonna be able to have fish on Good Friday, still gonna be able to enjoy conch. And the reason we need to make sure that is not just because it's a nice thing to have, but actually because we as a country depend on it in so many ways. And when we do face a time of crisis, we need to be able to turn to that like people evidently still do.
Yes.
So that's what we are all trying to do, is make sure that this stuff is still there for the next generation and that we're not sacrificing the next generation's ability to do all this for this one. And, right. You know, when we look at the volumes of what's being taken out of the sea, sometimes we need to question, I think, whether we are just trying to satisfy a huge demand that is ultimately unsustainable right now and future generations going to pay for it.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Now, just as we go, we're completely out of time, people. But Dr. Krista Sherman, your work, you got an extensive resume here, along with Mr. Carey and Dr. Higgs. But reading your resume and some of your work, I'm very boss of the queen conch, right? But I know that there are other conch, types of conch in the ocean that are available to us. I often want to tell people, look, we don't have to just eat grouper and snapper, you know, and hogfish, which is another type of snapper. But I'm also afraid that, like, as we reveal all of the treasures that are in the ocean, we run the risk that somebody's going to come in and try and exploit that resource and then eventually destroy it, right? Or eradicate it entirely. Can we build an empire on the screw conch?
A screw conch?
Yeah, the spicy conch, the pepper conch, the conch that is not as tender as the queen conch. Can we replace our queen conch empire with the spicy conch, pepper conch, aka the screw conch, and other types of conch in our waters?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that we're hoping to do is expose people to, through the sustainable seafood campaign, through all the other options that are out there. There's definitely more fish in the sea than grouper, snapper, and hogfish. And so part of that is to make people aware of the options that are available to them. But as Nick alluded to, we need to be able to do the work to figure out what is sustainable, what we have, what we need to protect to keep populations going. In order to do that, we need to be able to be in the water and do the work. We need to be mitigating the threats to these species, like stony coral tissue loss disease, like invasive species. So it's to do that work to make sure that you can have spicy conch or scorched conch or whatever other kind of conch or fish it is that you want to eat. But it's extremely important.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much to Mr. Carey from BNT, to Dr. Nick Higgs from the Island School, and to Dr. Krista Sherman from PIMS, Perry Institute for Marine Science. Thank you for joining me on the 10th anniversary of Guardian Radio and Morning Blend. To the winner of the two tickets, listen out for a call from the Guardian production team on how to pick up your tickets. If you're out there, stay tuned to Guardian Radio all day. There are giveaways and prizes. And thank you again to Drifters, Inventive Intellect, Marvelous Marv Cunningham, Wild Seed Designs, Cheesecake Heaven, Comfort Suites Resort, YKS Fashion Center, Atlantis Paradise Island, Duncan, Fusion Superplex, and Bristol Cellars. And to all the old birds out there like me, remember what Dr. Sherman said. There's plenty more fish in the sea. Stay tuned to Guardian Radio, the Bahamas.